Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. This is Star Talk. Neil deGrasse Tyson here, your personal astrophysicist. And I got with me Chuck Nice. Chuck.
Hey, Neil.
All right, Chuck, we are overdue for a show on monkeypox.
Yes.
We so are.
It's all the rage right now.
It's all the rage.
The country's gone monkeypox crazy, you know?
And so we found someone who was in high demand. We're just so delighted she could spare a few moments with us. Please help me welcome Professor Anne Remoyne, an epidemiologist from UCLA. Anne, welcome to Star Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're in an endowed chair there. An endowed chair of infectious diseases and in public health named Gordon Levin. Is that one person or is that Gordon, like Gordon's Law?
Gordon Levitt, the actor?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's two very generous people. Cool. And so Gordon and Levin.
Levin, uh-huh. Gordon and Levin. You got Gordon it. Levin. You got it. And you are uniquely qualified to be in this interview and enlighten us because you've spent decades on monkeypox, before anyone's thinking, you're all in it before anybody in the rest of the world is thinking about it. And you're there in the Congo, the Democratic Republic of Congo, where monkeypox was prevalent. And so we have a million questions for you.
So are you just prescient or like, did you know this was coming?
Yeah. She wanted to be ready for this moment. So therefore, 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Wait, and before we get into all your business, does it say infectious diseases on your business card? Like, what's that like when you hand it to someone? Do they want to cleanse
themselves? Do they no longer want to touch the card?
Back up a little bit.
Yeah, they immediately hand you the card right back. Like,
and disinfect, you know, they Purell their hands. So what's that like?
Well, it's changed a lot over the last couple of years, let me tell you. Yeah. In the years before the pandemic, when you'd say epidemiologist, people would say, are you a skin doctor?
Epidermis. Oh, yeah.
That was the discussion beforehand. Now, today, everybody knows what an epidemiologist is. We've hit the mainstream. So very, very different. Very, very different than it used to be.
And you have knowledge of value to people. So that has boosted your currency, presumably, out there, right?
Yeah. I think that people now actually understand what an epidemiologist
is. Tell us. Put that on the map right for us right now.
Well, an epidemiologist is studying patterns of disease in populations. So that's the point of epidemiology. And in terms of an infectious disease epidemiologist, I'm focusing specifically on patterns of disease in populations. I'm trying to understand what the burden of infections are, who's getting them, why are they getting them, and how you can prevent them.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so
the who, what, when, and where, why.
Yeah. So
that is the mantra of an epidemiologist.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so your training is useful for any infectious disease. You happen to have specialty in monkeypox.
So my training was actually just in community health sciences at UCLA. I got my master's degree there. Well, I could go even way back further. So my undergrad degree was history, but I specialized in African history.
Nice.
And had a particular interest in the Congo. I went into the Peace Corps. I was a guinea worm eradication volunteer, which was a...
You and President Carter. Yeah.
That's right. The Carter Foundation was funding it. Carter Foundation.
We've had him on Star Talk. It was great. Just talk. The whole program was on guinea worms. So yeah.
There you go. So I worked on guinea worm as a Peace Corps volunteer. And then when I finished, I went and got my master's in public health at UCLA, did a little bit of work for the World Health Organization afterwards in polio eradication, something that's been ringing the bell again recently.
Got news for you. You failed.
You failed.
Okay.
You failed.
Back to the drawing board on that one, Doc.
Exactly. Listen, I was working on it in India, Nepal, and Africa. So, and then after that, I went and got my PhD in international health with a specialty in disease prevention and control. And that department is actually now called global epidemiology. So my area of expertise is really global infectious diseases. And epidemiologists do a lot of different things. Some of us specialize in some things, some of us specialize in others. I really specialize in infectious diseases, but I started working on monkeypox when I started working in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2002. And at that point, I had just finished my PhD. I started working at the National Institutes of Health. And because I had worked in eradication programs, I'd worked in vaccination programs, disease surveillance. When I got to Congo, I was a program officer actually at NIH, working on a project related to malaria and pregnancy and pregnant women in Kinshasa. I sat down with the director of the National Laboratory trying to understand the lay of the land.
Zaire.
In Kinshasa, yep. That Jean-Jacques Moyembe, who's also been in the news quite a bit, he is the Congolese doctor who really was the first person to discover Ebola in 1976, had been leading the work at the National
Laboratory. You all know each other, as you must, right? Otherwise, you can't communicate anything, right?
That was the first person I sat down with. I mean, he was really wonderful. And he started telling me about this problem of monkeypox and that there seemed to be a lot of cases. But at the time, nobody was interested in analyzing these samples. It just, monkeypox wasn't on the radar. Everybody was busy with other things. And so I actually took my per diem and helped send those samples that had been sitting at the National Lab to a collaborating lab in Germany, who analyzed them, found out that there was a lot of monkeypox in there. The supposition was there might be some chickenpox, some monkeypox, but probably not all that much. We were very surprised at how much monkeypox was there. And so that was really the beginning of this project. We demonstrated that there was a lot of monkeypox there. And then we started an entire research program together to be able to really do intensified disease surveillance and show that there was a lot more there.
Saying monkeypox.
I know. I'm distracted by that too.
Yeah, you just keep saying monkeypox. And I just want to know, first of all, I mean, I know I've done a bunch of reading because it's all crazy now. Ah, you know, everybody freaking out. And I know that it's, you know, a zoonosis virus. We know that I hear these terms, clades. I hear this term, West African Basin, Congo Basin. What is all of this? What is all that?
Well, okay. So monkeypox. Monkeypox is a zoonotic disease, meaning it starts in animals and it resides in animals, but can cross over into humans. Monkeypox has traditionally been circulating in animals in sub-Saharan Africa. It's a misnomer. Monkeypox is a misnomer. Monkeypox is called monkeypox because it was first discovered in a monkey colony, a research colony in Denmark in 1958. So they called it monkeypox. But it really turns out this is a rodent pox.
It's a Denmark pox.
It is what's rotten.
In the state of Denmark. Okay. I see what you did there, Chuck.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So sorry, I we interrupted you.
Yeah,
please,
we did.
Please repeat that with Denmark.
So it's really a rodent pox. Okay.
Okay, go on.
It's really a rodent pox. And it resides, we think that the reservoir species are squirrels, pouch rats, other rodent species. It probably actually infects a lot of different rodent species. But that's, so monkeys can get it from rodents, just like humans can.
Right.
So
wait a minute. Let's look at this chain of transference here. Monkeys get it from the rodents. Does it then mutate in the monkeys and then they give it to us? Or do they just pass it along to us?
Monkeys can be incidental hosts. It's, you know, in DRC, most often the cases of monkeypox. Democratic Republic of Congo. Most of the cases are associated with squirrels, other rodent species. Oh. Sometimes people will pick up a monkey that may have a rash on it, may have been infected, and they'll get it from eating a monkey. But really, monkeys, you know, primates, humans, non-human primates, we're all incidental hosts. This is real virus that starts in rodents.
And by the way, you're scaring the crap out of me right now. Go ahead, Leon.
I'm just saying, maybe because I'm a city person, but you just said, if you pick up a monkey and they have a rash, that could be... I'm saying, I'm never picking up a monkey.
Right.
That is not a thing that I ever think of doing.
Piggybacking on that, what Neil just said, I'm thinking, you know, monkeypox. Okay, here's the deal. I don't hang out with monkeys. I'm good. Okay? Like, I'm not going to run into any monkeys, okay, here in New York City, so I'm okay. But now that you say it's a rodent pox, you're talking about rodents and squirrels, okay, now I'm scared because we got a lot of those.
Yes,
we do. And that's going to bring me, you're already ahead of the story, but let me tell you, that is exactly some of the things that I'm worried about. So here's
what she just told you, Chuck, is let her finish the damn story. let me translate the professor's comment.
I'm motivated by fear here. I'm sorry.
Okay, go.
So here's the deal. I'll try and make this quick. So the situation is this. Is that monkeypox has been spreading for a very long time. We didn't know monkeypox was out there because it looks just like smallpox, which is a cousin of monkeypox. And when we eradicated monkeypox or smallpox from the planet, we stopped vaccinating against pox viruses. And as a result, we started to see some chinks in our herd immunity armor. And so what happened was over time, as people were no longer vaccinated, people, when they came in contact with a rodent or a monkey, they would get infected.
This would be people below a certain age, right?
Well, it started out that what we really thought of this is a childhood disease. So in principle, it was children that were in contact with animals. And actually, the very first case of monkeypox in a human was discovered in the Democratic Republic of Congo in 1970 in a 9-month-old child who had not been vaccinated. And this was when they were at the end of smallpox eradication, they were looking for every single case of a pox-like illness and making sure that it wasn't a case of smallpox. That's part of the certification process for eradicating
for being extinct. Virus. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so that's how they discovered it was monkeypox. Once they eradicated monkeypox smallpox in humans from the planet, what they did was they decided it's really important to understand what's going on with monkeypox here. Is this going to be important? Is this something that's going to fill the ecologic niche? We don't know. So they started a program in DRC to monitor it. And really, the vast majority of the work that is the basis of understanding monkeypox is from 1981 to 1986. In DRC, and it was really mostly children because if you think about it, if everybody was vaccinated and they only stopped vaccinating in 82, it was really only young children that had any susceptibility to this virus. And that's why there's so little known. So when I got to DRC in 2002, you know, there were all these suspected cases of monkeypox and a lot of rumors of cases increasing, and it made sense because we no longer had immunity. So we started this project in DRC, Professor Mwayembe and I together, and we started doing intensified disease surveillance, and we ended up having a real understanding that there was a huge increase in monkeypox since the 1980s, since immunization stopped. So we wrote a paper, it was in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, and showed this 20-fold rise in the incidence of monkeypox since the end of smallpox vaccination campaigns. And that should have been a big warning to everybody, because that just showed that, listen, as immunity goes down and exposure goes up, you're going to see cases go up.
When you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member, you'll know a thing or two about an expertly packed capsule wardrobe that balances business and leisure. So you can go from conference sleek to cocktail party chic with a few new accessories. You can hustle from 9 to 5 before exploring with ease from 5 to 9. Because you're the chief excursion officer. The Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card. If you travel, you know. Learn more at go.amex/business.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Let me go back a little bit. If we all know, many people know, that the immunity that some milkmaids had to smallpox from their exposure to cowpox.
Cowpox.
Are you saying that the people most susceptible today to monkeypox are people young enough to have not gotten a smallpox vaccine? Because does a smallpox vaccine protect you against monkeypox in today's world?
Neil, that is exactly what I'm saying.
Wow. So how old do you have to be to have a smallpox vaccine?
I've got a scar. I got my smallpox. How about you, Chuck? You're 10 years younger than I am.
Yeah, I don't know. 75? What's that do?
You're too young.
Chuck, you got a scar on your shoulder? I got one.
No, I don't. I don't have a scar.
Chuck, were you born here in the United States?
Yeah.
Okay, well then you wouldn't have been vaccinated. Vaccination in the United States stopped in 71.
So now, how does it spread?
So wait a minute. Just another point here that it is smallpox vaccination probably does provide some protective immunity, but we don't really know how much in this particular outbreak. And because there are all these different modes of transmission that aren't the standard modes of transmission that we've been studying all these years, and we just don't know for sure. So, Chuck, you don't have to feel that jealous of Neil. You guys can both be jealous of me. I've been vaccinated. I was vaccinated in 2004. Okay. So sooner than both of you, just because I work on monkeypox.
You got the industrial strength super concentrated.
I did.
Yeah, MPXV like solution.
Okay, so this is on the skin. So can we presume it doesn't ever go airborne?
Well, I always say we should be humble about what we know and what we don't know about this virus. What we know about this virus is really, as I mentioned before, really concentrated in those early studies in the 1980s in villages, in remote rural villages in Congo. And that is a very different context. And so you can imagine that the studies that we have some animal model studies. We have a little bit of knowledge from what happened in the 2000s. There was a small outbreak in the United States in 2003, 47 cases from imported Gambian rats that were put into a facility next to prairie dogs. So
why would anyone import a rat?
What is going on? Bats and rats and monkeys and what is going on?
Listen, don't shoot the messenger here.
Okay, I'm just, damn.
So
I'm just thinking of the sewer rats in New York. And say, look, this is our place.
Tell me about it.
Import African rats into the sewers.
All right, the exotic pet trade. That's a whole different.
That's another. Oh my gosh. How do we stop this?
Well, that's a really good question. So as we're talking about these, so the way that we stop it is we have to get in front of it. How do we get in front of it? We have to have really good disease surveillance. We have to really have good situational awareness. We have to have great testing. Testing has to be widely available to everyone that even suspects that they've been, that they have potentially been exposed.
You left out the most obvious answer. Stop touching each other.
I'm for that one.
Well, on these Zoom calls make it much easier.
Well, I know. Until Zoom figures out a way to transmit a virus through the computer, you know, the Zoom call is the great protector of us all.
Well, there you go. But the truth is it's going to be through a variety of things. So we've got to have really good situational awareness. That's testing, good clinical definitions. Clinicians know what to look for. Then we also have really good vaccines. Now, there are a couple of vaccines that are out there. There's the Jynneos vaccine, which is this vaccine. It's a two-dose vaccine, and that's what's being distributed right now, but it's in really short supply, so we just don't have enough of it. And we don't really know how effective it's going to be in particular in this scenario.
So every day is a new set of data for you.
Every day is a new set of data, and there are a lot of knowledge gaps, a lot of things we have to understand. We have to be humble about what we know. We have a good base to start from, but there's a lot more we need to know. And you know, you've been in academia. It takes a lot of time to be able to get studies up and running, to be able to understand what's happening. I mean, it's not just that today there's a new virus and you can turn around and start it. You have to write protocols. You have to get funding. You have to get ethics approval. You have to then have the logistics of rolling these things out. So it does take a lot of time to get this done. And this is the fact, we just don't have the funding and the infrastructure in place to be able to do what we need to do.
How transmissible is this? How can I get it? Actually, how can I not get it? That's the real question. Yeah.
That's a really excellent question. It transmits through various routes. It's not as transmissible as something like SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19. It transmits most efficiently from person to person, skin to skin contact, sustained contact, very close contact. But it can also transmit through what we call fomites, contaminated objects, so sheets, towels, clothing, contaminated objects. And so it's probably much more contagious the closer you are, the more virus you're in contact with. And so when you're in contact with the lesions that it causes, direct contact, that is probably the most efficient route for transmission. And that sexual transmission is a perfect example of that.
I remember reading about the milkmaids. They were very specific about it. They would have to have an open sore while they were milking a cow with cowpox.
Exactly.
So if my skin is intact, how does someone else's monkeypox get into my skin?
Well, might not. I mean, skin can be a good barrier. It really depends because you can have
I'm a thick skin person. Okay.
You might not know how thin your skin actually is until you test it.
Until you do it. Okay.
So that's one way. I mean, you could also get it through respiratory secretions. You could be breathing it in, inhaling it. But there are a variety of different ways to get it. But I think
respiratory secretion, that would be like a sneeze or a cough.
Right, right. Okay. So bigger respiratory droplets that you might expel when coughing or sneezing.
Kent State's reputation in the fashion industry is something you would hear from everyone when you're in New York City.
I will say we're quite well known for being hard workers.
Kent is really known for delivering well-rounded students.
Kent has one of the most prestigious fashion programs in the U.S. and also internationally ranked.
Our alumni are in every corner of the industry, every job position that you can imagine.
They all are ready. They have all the courses. They have everything under their belt.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Beyond skin lesions, how might monkeypox also show up on your body?
Monkeypox also, you'll have lesions in the oropharynx. It can be down your throat. It causes what's called a cytokine storm, which is similar. SARS-CoV-2 also does that. So you could see, you're going to have a massive inflammatory response. You know, people, there were just two cases of individuals in Spain that died from inflammation, from brain inflammation, from in encephalitis, and so this can
be by the monkeypox.
Very triggered by monkeypox. So this can be a very serious disease. Fatality rates are low relative to other things, and in particular, this West African clade, not the Congo Basin clade. So the West African clade is what's circulating, and that tends to be milder. But there have been a few deaths. And of course, the more cases that we see, the more likely that is. And of course, when it gets into people who might have a suppressed immune system,
it could be
a lot worse.
Can it cause blindness in some
people? It can. And we've seen many instances of that in DRC. where we have a fair number of cases that it can in fact cause blindness. If the virus gets into your eye, it can really do some damage. So, you know, and a reminder too, it isn't even just about these very acute problems that we have really learned in the last several years how important it is, how viruses can create a lot of long-term consequences. It isn't just about the acute infection today, which is substantial and painful and scary and can be very distressing. But you know, we've learned a lot about what viruses can do and causing long-term consequences. I think that once we get more vaccine into the system and have better surveillance and better testing, that we will have this under much better control. And I do not anticipate that this will end up being something like SARS-CoV-2, where you see that everybody's going to have to be taking precautions all the time. That's a very different kind of virus, spreads very differently.
I know we're getting out of time, but this is a philosophical question, because in America, we tend to think of infectious disease as something that we need to protect ourselves from. But the more and more it looks like the world is closing in on us. So do we need to change our thinking? Like, it is an investment for us to fight disease outside of this country so that we can protect ourselves inside the country?
Chuck, absolutely. I mean, I say this all the time, an infection anywhere is potentially an infection everywhere. And we really do need to take that to heart, because you live in a global community.
Yes.
And what happens elsewhere eventually can affect you yourself at home. And so that's why we need to be doing better. We could have averted this situation with monkeypox if we had invested in helping countries like DRC be able to understand what was happening and get in front of it. But we failed to do so, and now we are paying the price. And this falls under, I also say this quite a bit, it's much easier to stay out of trouble than it is to get out of trouble. And now we are in get out of trouble mode once again, when we had the writing on the wall for a very long time.
Well, all I can say is you and your fellow epidemiologists, especially those who are specifically focused on legislation that affects public health, I don't know where we'd be without you. I mean, maybe we'd all still be in the caves dying of everything else that we look at these woodcuts and paintings of, you know, the Black Plague and all of this. So I don't think you guys are hero worshipped as much as you should be. And let me add to that Chuck, I don't know if you noticed the candor with which Anne spoke of what they don't yet know.
Right.
Okay, that's how you know she's a real academic.
Absolutely.
But what happens is, and what's wrong with you? You spent your life and you still don't know? I did 2 hours of research and I know way more than you on the internet. And I'm gonna have a podcast and I'm gonna tell everyone what I do know, and you should listen to me. This
how
what's going on.
You don't know stuff when I was on TikTok and I just learned everything about it.
That's what. So, Anne, my last question to you, because this is a shared space in our two Venn diagrams. What do you do about misinformation and rampant or people taking what they think is information and politically weaponizing it, socially, culturally weaponizing it? What do you do as a public health professional?
As a public health professional, I try to go on podcasts, for example.
What an idea.
Audiences here.
No, Very good. Why didn't we think of that?
Okay. No, but it's really true. What things that you have to do are you have to get out there in front of it, and you have to be vocal, and you have to get into as many different places as you possibly can. And you don't always want to just talk to the people who are agreeing with you. You want to talk to everybody, and you have to be willing to listen to everybody too, because it's reasonable to have questions. It's reasonable to question things, including questioning scientists. But sometimes you end up with social media today, the speed with which disinformation gets out there, it's very hard to combat. It's very hard to get in front of.
Yeah. That's like the quote from Mark Twain. In the early morning, when you wake up, a lie can make it halfway around the world. before the truth has a chance to put on its pants.
Yeah.
So I'm maybe misquoting it a little bit, but that's pretty much what he said. Anyhow, and this has been, I don't want to say delightful because you're telling us about infectious diseases, but it's been highly enlightening and informative. And as monkeypox continues to develop, either to go back in the can or escape even more, can we get you back on to get an update?
Absolutely. I'll be happy to come on anytime.
Delighted. Okay. Thank you very much for being on Star Talk. Chuck, always good to have you.
Always a pleasure.
Hey, and where do we find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at A. Ramoine.
And Ramoine is R-I-M-O-I-N.
You bet. And also on Instagram at Anne Ramoine.
Okay. Excellent. We'll look for you there. Keep us enlightened. Keep us informed. Keep us smart. And you've already been doing a great job at that. All right. This has been Star Talk. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. As always, keep looking up.
Kent State, their name does something for people. When people hear that you're a Kent State grad, they're like, oh yeah, I have a lot of nurses like that. And they're good nurses. They want to hire you because you're from Kent State in their nursing program. They teach the art of nursing. They teach the therapeutic communication. They teach how to really care for the person and not just knowledge. Even when it's hard in classes, even when this is a new adjustment, the school itself has the people and the support that you need to be the best nurse that you can be.
Begin at Kent State University.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.